Welcome to the Mina Kimes Show featuring Lenny, the only NFL podcast where one of the hosts has a biological anti-cat bias. I don't like cats either, but Lenny can't help it. Speaking of cats, I'm delighted to be joined this week by a man who bore witness to one of the most significant events in recent NFL history, nay, American history, Booger McFarlane. Welcome to the show.
Glad to be here. What's going on, Mina?
I just, first, before we talk about the games, I just have to know, what was it like watching the cat? Tell me everything.
You know, it was funny because the cat actually came into the screen opposite the field of play. So if you're in the booth where I was, to my left, which was where the Giants and the Cowboys were playing, and all of a sudden the spotter is kind of pointing, and I'm like, I'm thinking the first thing is there's a streaker on the field. I'm like, okay, I've never seen one of those. Maybe we'll get lucky. And I look down and I just see this little black thing. And I'm like, is that a cat or a dog? And then I saw him cut a little bit. I'm like, okay, that's a cat. I'm like, at what point are they going to stop the game? And then all of a sudden the crowd, you know how the crowd, they notice and they start murmuring. And next thing you know, the ref stops the game. And then at that point, it really got interesting because now you have the NYPD and the fire department, like all these people are out there trying to catch the cat. I'm like, how many people does it take to catch a cat? And I mean, the cat goes in the stands, the cat comes out, and to my knowledge, they never caught the cat. The cat just ran up in the tunnel, and I'm like, okay, so I guess somebody's going to block him off now.
Well, what was worse, the first responders, the security guards, their attempts to catch the cat or the Giants tackling in the second half?
Yeah, I think they were both pretty bad. At least I think we have a better chance of fixing the Giants tackling. I don't think there's any chance whatsoever you're going to fix the first responders' tackling ability. Some of those guys can't touch their toes, and it's tough to bend and have lateral quickness if you can't touch your toes. So hopefully Pat Shurmur and James Besser, who's the defensive coordinator for the Giants, they can figure out that tackling issue because Ezekiel Elliott was kind of running wild on them.
Yeah, well, we'll get to the Cowboys and Zeke, Booger, but, you know, you've got a true barn burner of a Monday night game next week. I might venture to say it's the best on the schedule so far, and I want to talk about it in depth with you. And, of course, that's Seahawks-Niners. You know, the battle of the NFC West, it's really, it has the potential, I think, to revive a rivalry that at one point, arguably from 2012 through 2016 or so, was the best in the NFL.
It was, and I think it was because if you go back to when Jim Harbaugh was there, and, you know, he turned this into a real physical battle, and Pete Carroll and John Snyder, what they've done, just from the standpoint of building a team, building a culture. And you had, yeah, I mean, it was a bloodbath. And it was two great defenses, two teams that really mirrored each other. And the play was at a high level. And so now you bring in Kyle Shanahan because Pete Carroll is still there. And you look at kind of, he's kind of reinvented this offense. It's still a run-based offense, but it's a little different than what Jim Harbaugh had. And defensively, the 49ers, you know, they're led by this defensive line. And it's a defense that really kind of grew its roots from Seattle. So it's amazing how you have two teams that are very similar. They mirror each other with their styles of play. You have two very high-priced quarterbacks, two teams in the same division. So I truly think we're in for one of our special treats, maybe similar to what we had with Green Bay and Detroit, or maybe even with Houston and New Orleans with our first game of the season.
Mm-hmm. Oh, that was a good one too, Houston, New Orleans, yeah. Well, I think it's interesting, Booger, to hear you kind of talk about how those teams were built during the Harbaugh-Carroll rivalry. Also, those coaches didn't like each other, which also made it really fun. Because now, you're right, this Niners team, I think, bears a lot of similarities to those teams. Some interesting differences and wrinkles. But the Seahawks team really looks nothing like those Seahawks teams. In fact, it's funny when you step back and you look statistically at this Seahawks team, it is crazy how much better they are on offense than on defense. Obviously that was not their identity back in those days. And I think that it's that matchup that fascinates me most. This Seahawks offense versus this Niners defense, which is sort of the strength against strength matchup in this game. I mean, starting with the Seahawks offense, you know, I think it's pretty indisputable that Russell Wilson is the MVP. You can tell me if I'm wrong. And one thing that's given me, I guess made me more excited about them, Booger, is that they're letting him air it out a little bit more in this last game against Tampa, your old team. Russell Wilson threw almost twice as much as they ran the ball, which was a nice change of pace. They're still not calling enough play action, even though he has the second best numbers on play action in the league. They're still below average in how much they call it. But I feel like it's trending in the right direction. Like, it's almost like they seem to be finally aware, oh, right, we don't have a good defense. Let's let Russell win games.
Well, you know, I think that that's the biggest difference is, you know, Russell Wilson and the level of play that he has. I would agree with you. Right now, he's the MVP. I think followed by Deshaun Watson and Lamar Jackson, Christian McCaffrey. I think they're all right there in that conversation. I think it'll be one of those four, depending on who has the better second half of the season. But, you know, with what they've done offensively, they basically allow Russell to create a lot of things on his own. You know, when you look at this offense and you look at how they call plays and you look at how physical they want to be with Carson and Penny running the football, you know, the offensive line isn't great, but they're really good at what they do when it comes to coming off running. And, you know, oftentimes their shortcomings become strength because from a pass blocking standpoint, they're not great. And so that forces Russell Wilson to kind of ad lib and get out of the pocket. And when he does that, that's when he becomes not just Russell, but dangerous. And I think when that happens is when we've seen a lot of the great plays that he's made so far this season. So, you know, wide receiver-wise, Tyler Lockett is having an outstanding season. DK Metcalf, you know, we all thought he was a one-trick pony, you know, just a guy that can stand up and take his shirt off and he has an eight-pack, but he's proven that he can actually run the route free and play receiver at a very high level. And, you know, now they add in Josh Gordon, you really don't know what you're going to get from him. So, offensively, the weapons that they have, I think are only going to enhance Russell Wilson's MVP candidacy. And I can't wait to see them, just how they use Josh Gordon with Lockett and Metcalf and what they're going to do to combat this 49ers defensive line. Because, to me, that's been really the story of the season. No one expected the 49ers to be undefeated. They're undefeated, not necessarily because of the quarterback, but because of the way they play complementary football, meaning they run the football. Jimmy Garoppolo's asked to do certain things, but their defensive line has dominated the entire football league so far. And so what do the Seahawks do to neutralize that? Because they got to let Russ drop back, and when he drops back, now how do you block Bosa? How do you block Armstead? How do you block Butner? What about D4? Like, I can keep going on and on. There's so many guys you got to block, so that's going to be really, really interesting.
Yeah, I mean, that defensive line, going into this season, I expected to be good. I did not expect the secondary, in particular, everyone but Richard Sherman, to be so good. I mean, Tart and Ward have been playing at a really high level. They get Akilah Witherspoon back, potentially, I think, this week. He was playing well before he went down. The one area, Booger, where I think there's a vulnerability here, and this is no secret, with Quan Alexander going out for the season, the linebacker group in San Francisco does not have a lot of depth. I mean, it looks like they're going to slide over Dre Greenlaw to the Sam, and you know, obviously Fred Warner's at the mic, but that is, I think, an area of the field where it was already, I mean, I thought Alexander played well, certainly, but if I had to pick an area of weakness on this Niners defense, that would be it. And so I think it'll be interesting to see how this Seattle offense, which has been very, I mean, you mentioned the wide receivers have been amazing, how they decide to counter that, how they decide to counter the pass rush. Because so far what's worked against the Niners, and I use work very tentatively, but I think the Arizona game, actually, you saw a few things working pretty well with Kyler, is a quick passing game, screens, and I would think if these, you know, again, with a sort of an uncertain liner group, a healthy dose of play action to try to confuse them.
Well, and I think you're right. You know, what this group wants to do is they want to rush the passer, and they want to get in those track stances like they're running a 100-meter dash. They want to come off the ball. So if I'm Seattle, what I'm going to do is I'm still going to throw the football because you can't just line up and run it 77 times during the game. But what you got to be able to do is run run the football, and then when you throw off of run action. So I'm not going to have Russ drop back four wide shotgun like we're Oklahoma or Texas Tech, because now you're asking for disaster. What I'm going to do, keep a tight end in, keep maybe on the fullback, play action, seven-man protection, chip protections, different things of that nature. I'm still going to throw the football to Lockett and Metcalf and Josh Gordon if he's ready to go, but I'm just going to do it out of run looks, because that'll just slow that defensive line down just a tick. And in the National Football League, you know, if you get 3 seconds to throw the football, then that's pretty much what you need. Anything more than that, then you're playing with fire.
Yeah. Yep. And I also, by the way, you know, I mentioned they're probably going to slide Greenlaw over. I think there's a rookie who plays well off the top of my head. Osher, I think his name is. He might not be a rookie. But in any case, what you're saying is really important. I think you can't fall behind on passing downs, because another solution potentially for the loss of Alexander is you would see them using more dime, right? But again, if you're not letting them get into that position, you can sort of stay ahead of them strategically in that matchup between offense and defense. Now, on the other side of the ball, I mean, it's funny, right? Because I did a podcast last week where I tried to pick the weakness for every playoff contender or the top teams, and it was really hard to find a weakness for San Francisco. The only one I could come up with, especially with the backup tackles playing as well as they had been, was Garoppolo. Then Garoppolo comes out and has what I thought was his best game of the season.
Mm-hmm. He did. He played really well Thursday night. I think this team, before Garoppolo started playing at a level, I would have said the weakness was the wide receiver, because they've been looking for a true number one. You know, they dibbled and dabbled with, you know, Debo Samuel and Goodwin and all these different guys. But, you know, now that you have Emmanuel Sanders, you have a true number one. And then you can slide Debo, can be your number two, and you got Bourne and you got these other guys. So now the wide receiver crew is pretty good. The consistency of Jimmy Garoppolo, to me, is the key. I think they can run the football against anyone. I don't think there's a team in this league that the 49ers cannot run the football against. So if you're going to be able to run the football the way they do, you're going to get premier looks, because the defense has to bring the safety down or the extra guy down. So now what do you get? That limits what you can do in the back end. So Jimmy Garoppolo goes into the game on Tuesday. He knows exactly what coverage he's going to get pretty much every Sunday. He knows exactly how teams have to play them because of the threat of the running game. So in order to stop the run, like, the run is simple math. It's nothing else. It's not that complicated. It's simple math. If the offense has 5 blockers, you need really 6 defenders to stop the run. So it's simple math. You need one more guy than they have. That's why the Wildcat became popular, because what the Wildcat did is the Wildcat gave the offense an extra blocker. So they had a numbers advantage. And so now, with the way the 49ers run the football, they force you, if they have 6 guys to block, well, you have to have 7 to stop the run. So what does that mean? That means you have 7 to stop the run. That leaves you only 4 other guys to cover the pass. And so now you are forced to play some form of single high safety, 3 deep zone, one-on-one coverage. And now if you're a quarterback worth a grain of salt, you should be able to carve that up pretty good. And that's why, you know, you see Jimmy Garoppolo, when he is on, he's having career days, because the coverage is very limited, and it's all dictated based on what Kyle Shanahan can do. Like, he is as good of a play caller as there is in football. I put him right there with Andy Reid, Josh McDaniels, Sean Payton, Sean McVay. Like, he is right there in that group right there, as far as the better play callers in our league.
I 100% agree, and I think, you know, what you described, right, which is what defenses have to do to stop this run game, is also what makes them so vulnerable to the pass, in particular to George Kittle, right, who's like the perfect weapon for this offense. Because Shanahan does throw so often out of heavier sets, defenses, like you said, it's a math thing. They just don't have an answer for him. And also, you'll see, by the way, often you'll see Kittle like leaking out. Right, he stays back to block and then leaks, which is, I don't know how you stop that, especially, by the way, if they get the fullback Juice back for this game. They do that with him too. I've been puzzling. This is like, I think, the most challenging. I actually think it's easier for the Seahawks to come up with ways to neutralize the Niners' pass rush. I think that's easier for them than to come up with ways to stop the offense, because they just don't have the personnel, right? I mean, the secondary is not great. The pass rush has been, even though they went out and traded for Clowney, who's been good and gets double teamed a lot, it's just not been sufficient enough. And you obviously have to be able to rush with four against this offense. So I just don't really know what they're going to do. They also, Booger, they play a ton of base. I think more than anyone else in the NFL, they leave those linebackers on the field. And, those linebackers just haven't been great. Bobby Wagner's still elite, but they haven't been great in coverage. So that sounds really depressing, but I just don't know if they have an answer for them.
Well, it's a system they play. They believe in it. You know, Griffin on the back end had a really good year last year. He hasn't been quite as good so far this year. You know, Bobby Wagner, K.J. Wright are still two of the more elite linebackers in the league. Michael Kendricks. So they're pretty athletic. I think the issue has been, and I think you hit the nail on the head, is just a consistent pass rush. Like, they're the antithesis of what the 49ers are. You know, the 49ers, all they want to do is rush, and they can rush with the best of them, and sometimes you can gash them on the run. Well, you know, the Seahawks are pretty good up front against the run, but, you know, even with Ziggy Ansah and Jadeveon Clowney, they still had trouble getting to the quarterback. And so that forces the defense to blitz a little bit more. And so now you have, you know, corners on the back end who aren't playing great, now playing more man. And that creates issues also.
Yeah, it's a difficult – I mean, it's a difficult matchup for any team, right? Like, I've been watching with a lot of curiosity how defenses have been trying to stop this Shanahan game. I mean, in the Rams game – you saw the Rams defense at times do that 6-by-1 front that teams have been doing to the Rams, which doesn't work against Kyle as well because their offensive line is better at pulling and they've got counters for that. In the Cardinals game, you saw them dropping Buda Baker to help out, which was fine except for when Jimmy's dealing, you obviously are leaving your corners on island. So there's not really an easy answer. I just think Seattle's best hope in this game is to turn it into a shootout. But I don't know. I think it still has the potential to be a very good game. I'll say that.
Well, yeah, I think it's going to be a really good game. I think this game, to me, depends on how Garoppolo plays. I think we've seen enough from Russell Wilson over the years to know what we're going to get from him. He's going to be creative. He's going to make some plays. I think the game could depend on how Garoppolo plays. If he's accurate and he's making, you know, making really good throws, I think that it's going to be – it's going to be tough to deal with the 49ers. I think that if he's off, and now Russell Wilson, you know, gets a drive going, and next thing you know, it's 10-0 Seattle. And, you know, Kyle, you know, does Kyle stick with the run game? Does he continue to be physical, or does he turn the game over to Jimmy G? And so I think all that's going to be dependent upon, to me, Garoppolo is the wild card always for the 49ers. Because I think the defense
Absolutely.
Can travel. I think the run game can travel. It's always going to depend on what type of quarterback play you get from Garoppolo.
Couldn't agree more. Right. And like last week, he was, again, you know, wasn't, he didn't, obviously didn't turn the ball over. And that's really, I think, what you got to hope for against this team. So in a second, we're going to talk about a couple other games. First, I want to tell you guys about ZipRecruiter. Hiring can be a slow process. Cafe Altura CEO Dylan Miskowitz needed to hire a director of coffee for his organic coffee company, but he was having trouble finding qualified applicants, so he switched to ZipRecruiter. ZipRecruiter doesn't depend on candidates finding you, it finds them for you. Its technology identifies people with the right experience and invites them to apply for your job so you get qualified candidates fast. Dylan posted his job on ZipRecruiter and said he was impressed by how quickly he had great candidates apply. He also used ZipRecruiter's candidate rating feature to filter his applicants so he could focus on the most relevant ones. And that's how Dylan found his new director of coffee in just a few days. With results like that, it's no wonder 4 out of 5 employers who post on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate within the first day. See why ZipRecruiter is effective for businesses of all sizes. Try ZipRecruiter for free at our web address, ZipRecruiter.com/Mina. That's ZipRecruiter.com/MINA, ZipRecruiter.com/Mina. ZipRecruiter, the smartest way to hire.
Question. Lenny, for your thoughts.
All right, before we get to Lions-Bears, taking a few questions from listeners. Thanks, guys, always, for leaving them. Vin Nuzzi asks, Booger, I'm going to ask you this one as well. What do you see out of Josh Allen, the the Bills quarterback. Well, I'll take it first. I think there's good and bad. The bad is, you know, just statistically, the Bills still have the 30th ranked pass offense in the NFL. Josh Allen, his completion percentage above expected is still negative. But I have one positive thing I've seen from him, less hero ball, right? Because that team is so good around him, he just can't lose them games. And I think recently we've seen that less from him, Booger.
Well, I think that, you know, Josh is starting to understand who he is. And, you know, to me, that's the most important thing as a player. You know, do what you do well. Don't try to do something totally different. And, you know, accuracy was always something he had to work on when he came out of Wyoming, and he's still working on it. But he realizes that he's really gifted with an arm that really can make any throw and can throw it at any speed. He can run the football. He's really athletic. He's big. And so I just think he's using what he has, and they're calling a really good game. They get him out of the pocket. They get him on the edge. They give him the ability to run. And so I think when you look at how Buffalo plays complementary football. The defense is really good. Sean McDermott has always been a very good defensive coach. You pair that with a physical football team that runs the football with Frank Gore, and now the defense and the offense complement each other, and they're winning a lot of football games, and they're probably going to get a wild card.
I love John Brown. I watched this game with interest, the last game rather, on Sunday, because I wanted to see Haskins' debut. And John Brown is just always open. He's always open. I mean, I like everything they did in free agency in Buffalo, but I really love him. Actually, this next question is very similar. Mikey Torts asks, what do you see out of Josh Allen? He's talking about the Jaguars pass rusher. Booger, what have you seen out of Josh Allen, the other Josh Allen?
I've seen someone that's just as good as Nick Bosa. He just doesn't get the credit, yep. Doesn't get the hype because he's in Jacksonville. But statistically, I think from a sack standpoint, I think they have the same amount of sacks. I think Allen has a couple more tackles and maybe one or two more forced fumbles. So Josh Allen is having just as good, if not better, of a year than Nick Bosa. However, Bosa makes the highlight play where he gets the sack and he gets the interception, and I get it. But Josh Allen is having a really, really good season in Jacksonville.
Another Josh Allen question. These were all in a row. Mikey Torts asks, he says he thinks Josh Allen, and this is Bill's Josh Allen, should be a tight end. Listen, I think Josh Allen has gotten a better quarterback, but I maintain he would be an all-pro tight end. What other position change would you like to see in the NFL? So he's asking us to think of like one player we would like to see play a different position.
A different position?
Like a wide receiver who'd be an awesome cornerback.
That's kind of, that's an interesting question. I would love to see Patrick Peterson play receiver. You know, he's always kind of politicked a little bit. He's a great athlete. you know, something like that, or, you know, just maybe even, I'm trying to think. I would even go outside the box. Like, if we don't even use football, like, how about taking – I always wanted to see, like, Russell Westbrook play free safety. You know, just taking a guy
that's
a super athlete. Yeah, because Russell has not only the athletic skills, but the demeanor. Like, his demeanor and personality fits defense.
That's a good one. I love doing it with basketball players. By the way, your Peterson one is funny because every cornerback I've ever met is convinced he'd be an all-pro wide receiver.
Of course.
I'd like to see all of them try to play wide receiver and see some of those butterfingers on the field. Just for a day, let them all take a shot at playing wide receiver. You don't hear it the other way. You only hear DBs saying that they'd be so good at wide receiver. Speaking of good wide receivers, this next game I want to talk about is Lions-Bears, and I went back and I rewatched a lot of the Lions-Raiders game to think through this and prepare for it, and those wide receivers, Marvin Jones, Kenny Galladay, they are crushing it this season. They are excellent, Booger.
Well, not only are they excellent, the guy that's throwing them the football has been outstanding. You know, Matthew Stafford is throwing the ball at a very high level, and I think when you look at what Matt Patricia is doing, you know, everyone gives and says, well, he's just trying to be Bill Belichick. No, he's not. You know, we had the Lions against the Packers on Monday night. and, you know, to have a chance to talk to him for a half hour and just find out what makes him tick and, you know, the things he's trying to instill with that team. I was thoroughly impressed. They play a lot of man coverage. So if you think about when you go against yourself during training camp, those receivers get a chance to play man coverage or go against man coverage against a really good secondary with Darius Slay and Coleman and the guys that they face every day in practice, Melvin. So those receivers are battle-tested. And so now you got Galladay and you got, you know, those guys that are just really killing it, Marvin Jones. And then you throw the tight end, Hockenson in there. And so you start to see an offense that even though they don't have Kerryon Johnson because of a shoulder, Matthew Stafford is really, really playing at a very high level. And he made some throws against the Raiders that were A-plus throws.
Yeah, I mean, Stafford's having one of the best seasons of his career. By the way, so is Danny Amendola, who's having the best season of his career.
Right. Well, I mean, Danny's been around like 25 years.
I know. He is one of those players who he's like the Hunter Renfro of the NFL. But, you know, it's funny, though, right? Because going into the season, you talked about Patricia and what people thought about him. And I think when they hired Daryl Bevel, everyone thought, oh, no, this is just going to be like a run-first offense. And it's going to be boring. And in fact, it's been the opposite in terms of effectiveness, right? They have one of the best passing games in the league. Stafford has been incredible by just about every measure. And it's been a horrible run, which has obviously been the case in Detroit since Sanders pretty much, but they haven't been able to run the football. And I think, you know, in this Raiders game, I don't know if you caught that, final fourth down play, which it was frustrating because it was a really bad play call. It was it was play action to like the back. It was to like someone I'd never heard of, a backup tight end or something. And it was so obvious that he was going to pass it. And Burger, it was frustrating to me because I think aside from that, Bevel called a hell of a game. He's been a great coordinator for them. But it just seems like they haven't really gotten that reputation for having the high flying offense that they deserve.
Well, and I think because, you know, they've had to throw, if you look at Stafford's career, like he's always throwing the football 40, 50 times a game and they still don't win. Like Detroit hasn't really, made a playoff run in, I can't think forever. And so even though they put up great numbers, you don't really get any results from it. And so I think that's the reason probably why they, you know, go overlooked, for years. They went so many games without a 100-yard rusher. It was unreal. And so I just think the perception, you know, it's no different in life. You know, oftentimes the perception, even though it may not be reality, it's how we view the thing we're talking about. Regardless of what reality is, once the perception is made, it's how everybody's going to view you or it. And I think that's the case in Detroit.
Well, I'll tell you what. The perception of Matt Stafford should be enhanced by the comparison to what's across the field this weekend.
Mm-hmm.
With this Bears offense. Good Lord. Booger, I don't even know what to say at this point. It's so bad.
Well, I think the first thing you got to do is the job of a coach has always been and will always be put your players in the best position to succeed. And right now, I don't think Matt Nagy's doing that. And to me, that's the bigger issue. We're going to blame Mitchell Trubisky, and he's going to get blamed for a lot. But I just don't think that this coaching staff is putting this quarterback in position to succeed. Now, maybe he can't handle it, and maybe they know it, and so maybe they're trying to work around some of his deficiencies. And if that's the case, I get it. But it sure looks bad every Sunday when I think there was a point in the game when the Bears had ran like probably 15 plays or 20 plays, and they had like 3 yards of offense. I'm like, that's impossible in the National Football League, but sure enough, they did.
It really is. I pulled up the box score and I was like, this can't be right. Like my computer must be broken or something. I don't know. It must be a glitch. Like it was so improbable. And teams are just absolutely selling out, right, to stop the run against them. And I don't blame them. And, as a result, it's really hard to evaluate David Montgomery, who I think is good. But I'd be curious just to kind of stick there for a second, right, on Nagy and Trubisky, because I agree with you to an extent. Like, I don't think he's putting him in the best position to succeed. I also, by the way, think this offensive line has regressed severely, and people aren't talking about that enough. But Booger, he is missing, like, just, like, very elementary NFL throws at this point. Like, I'm really, like, what would you do if you're Nagy, and to try to at least resuscitate this offense to some degree?
Well, I think anytime it gets really complex, you always have to start with the simplest thing. Don't deal with the complex. So don't try to do too much. Find five or six things that he does well. And when you get those, allow him to do those things well. You know, too many times what happens is we try to do too much. And I think that, you know, if the coach or if the quarterback can't handle it, then there's not much you can do. And you got to figure out ways to work around it. But, you mean, this is going – I mean, Trubisky's making – he's probably made, what, 30 starts? Like, his ability to handle information and his capacity for learning should be pretty high. So I'm really not sure what's going on up there. I just know that, you know, when this defense is healthy, it's Super Bowl worthy. And the fact that they're losing games where the defense actually plays well, it's got to be a very alarming, not only to the fans, but to Ryan Pace, who's the GM.
It reminds me a little bit of, it reminds me a lot of what we saw in Jacksonville during the Blake Bortles era, where when you watch this defense, they're just exhausted by the end of the game. That's what I saw in the Raiders game. Like, they're still good, right, by every measure, even with Hicks gone. I mean, they regressed a little bit, I think, but and you can point to Max numbers, but he's still getting double teamed, and you're seeing other guys eat. But they're just tired. They're tired. They're on the field so much, and that by the end of the games, they're exhausted. And I do wonder, Booger, and I wonder if you could speak to this. You know, having played if you're part of a good defense, this defense isn't quite elite anymore. How dispiriting is it to be on the same team as an offense that's doing as little as they do, and just knowing you're going to be on the field so much?
Hey, you better man up. That's all I can say. Like, it's not something that obviously you look forward to as a defender, but throughout the year, what happens is you're hoping that it evens out. You know, sometimes the offense is going to have to carry the defense and vice versa. What you don't want is you don't want it to just always be one-sided, because then what happens is you start getting those sideways looks when you come off the field. And in the locker room, the guys start chirping. You know, if the defense is carrying their weight and the offense, you know, if you hadn't scored a touchdown between Labor Day and Halloween, that's a problem. You know, I mean, at some point, we got to put some points on the board. But that's up for the leaders of the team. And I think that, you know, what you want to see, and I think what the defense needs to see from Trubisky is you need to see the effort from him, meaning he's the first one there, last one to leave. Like, I saw a comment today that he was worried about the TVs and how it's all being on. If you're concerned with the televisions, Mitch, then to me that's a bigger issue. I don't care if every TV in the building is on. You should be worried about getting better. You shouldn't be watching the TV. He's got to get his mind focused on the right things, and hopefully the coaching staff, especially Matt Nagy, can do that.
I guess this Lions defense, they definitely have some weaknesses. I mean, and going into this game and thinking about Nagy and what kind of game plan would work, you mentioned that the corners have been playing well. I think Justin Coleman's one of the better free agency pickups. Slay's still Slay. I really like Tracy Walker, the safety, by the way.
Yeah.
But I think the linebacker group has a lot of vulnerability, and they're not rushing the passer nearly as well as they should. So they're certainly not impenetrable. By the way, I love Damon Harrison, but that defensive line across the board has regressed a great deal. I thought the Mike Daniels signing and Harrison and Deshaun Hand, I thought they were going to be great, and they just have been far from great.
Yeah, they should be better. The problem is they don't really have a true number one. You know, it's kind of like having a lot of role players but no star. You know, if you could imagine, you know, a team that needs somebody to set the table and paid Trey Flowers a lot of money, but Trey Flowers is not, he's not a star pass rusher. He's a star role player. And there's a difference. And I think the guys up front, Snacks, has been maybe the best run defender in football the last couple of years, but he's not a pass rusher. And so when the game is not a phone booth game, two of your better players are neutralized because you're not running the football. Matt Patricia has that New England scheme. It's a pressure-based scheme. They play a lot of man-to-man coverage. Jared Davis is a really good backer. You know, they even have A'shaun Robinson. You know, he's up in there in the mix. So they got a lot of good players. But their secondary is one of the better secondaries in football. And so what they're going to try to do, instead of rushing the passer, they're going to try to make plays on the ball when the ball is thrown. So they may not get a lot of sacks, but as long as that ball comes out in reasonable time, they feel like their secondary with Slay and Melvin and those guys on the back end, Coleman, they can make some plays when the ball is thrown.
Yeah. I mean, it is, as you know, as good as you are as a secondary, it is tiring trying to cover if you got a pass rush that's not getting home. And Detroit's pass rush ranks last in the league in pass rush win rate right now. Who could have predicted that a player leaving the Patriots and getting a big contract would not live up to that contract? That's never happened before. Before we get to the last game, I just want to take a quick second to tell you about a couple of podcasts. One is ESPN Daily. That's my podcast. Drops every weekday. It's about 20 minutes. We cover a different sports story. Check it out. Another one is The Right Time with Bomani Jones. This week, Bo unveils part 3 of his sideline series on the role of boosters in college sports with Stephen Godfrey of SB Nation. Download and subscribe to The Right Time with Bomani Jones wherever you get your podcasts. So, Booger, the last game I want to talk about is the Sunday night game. It's a good one. Minnesota versus Dallas. Two teams, I think, that when you look at the NFC, they're obviously playoff contenders, but I don't think anyone is comfortable calling them Super Bowl contenders, if that makes sense. And having just watched Dallas, I figure we should start there. Are they real or are they frauds?
No, Dallas is real. They may not always play, but Dallas has, you know, if you're going in the kitchen and you're saying, okay, I got a party of 20 coming over and I need to make a kick-ass meal, and you walk in there and you say, what do I have to work with? Dallas has everything you need to cook that meal. The key is, you know, sometimes when you mix up the macaroni and cheese, it's just a little off. You know, sometimes when you do the Brussels sprouts, they're just a little off. And I think that's the whole deal with the Cowboys. Sometimes they have all the ingredients, but they're just a little off, whether it's the quarterback or the defense so far this season. Dak Prescott's playing at a high level. Ezekiel Elliott is the best running back in football. The offensive line, the highest paid line in football. You know, you got Gallup, you got Cobb, you got Amari Cooper, who may be the best route runner in football. Like, I can go on and on. I mean, the offense is statistically the number one offense in football. Their issue has been defensively in the pass rush. They went into the game on Monday night having only 17 sacks. Now, they got 5 sacks Monday night, and they were able to dominate the Giants, which, you know, shout out to Mike Remmers and Nate Solder, who are garbage at the offensive tackle spot. I just think overall Dallas has to be more consistent, and as long as they do that, then Dallas is going to be right there in the end. Because I think the offensive line is too good, the running back is too good. They just got to get consistent rush from Robert Quinn, DeMarcus Lawrence, Michael Bennett now coming over, Malik Collins. If they do that, then I think Dallas is going to be in good shape.
Boy, that Bennett signing was a really good one. He has consistently played at such a high level, and I think he has been devalued by teams, honestly, more probably for off the field, even though he hasn't done anything off the field, but just them saying, oh, you know, it could be difficult in the long run. But he's, which I don't agree with, I'm just saying, you know, we're talking about a guy who gets traded for nothing, despite the fact that he still is able to rush the passer from the inside at an extremely high level, even did in New England before they traded him, quite frankly, and certainly did in Philly last year. But I think you're right to, you know, throw a caveat on what we saw from the pass rush against New York, given that it's New York with that line, and I think Jones holding onto the ball a bit too long at times. But they certainly have the talent. And I think also, I mean, gosh, by the way, that game, Sean Lee turned back the clock. He looked awesome. They've got the linebacker group. I think, like, Xavier Woods looked really good to me in that game, but, and I know that Cowboys fans still, they wanted a safety. I think against better passing offenses, that secondary is an issue. But I think you're right, Booger, to say that, like, when you look at this team across the board, just at the roster, they have the personnel. It just seems to be a matter of execution. I think that's what you're seeing on offense, by the way, why they've struggled at times at the beginning of games. In this game, in the first half, they just kind of shoot themselves in the foot a lot, it feels like.
Yeah, well, I mean, coming off a bye, you can understand that. I mean, guys are going to be a little off. I get it. You know, but, I mean, the key is not how you start, how you finish. And, you know, Dak threw a bad pick on an RPO in the first pass of the game. And then the rest of the game, he was brilliant. And the defense held it down. And Zeke Elliott, you know, it's just tough to stop. You talk about turning back the hands of time. I mean, Jason Witten had like 10 targets. I'm like, man, are they trying to get Witten, you know, like the record on Monday night tonight? I mean, he just kept going, and he only had about 50 yards, but he was catching the little, you know, move the chain type plays. And I mean, Dallas's offense is not the issue. It's going to be about the defense and keeping Van Der Esch and Jalen Smith healthy. And if they do that, Dallas is going to be right there with New Orleans and Seattle and San Francisco and that whole crew and the Rams. Nobody's talking about the Rams. Your Rams, me the Cons. Nobody's mentioning them right now. So, you know, they're going to be right there in the end.
Yeah, by the way, the Witten thing is funny to me because I feel like it's going to be like 2050. Jason Witten's going to be, I don't know, what is he, 85 years old, and he's still going to get like 45 yards against the Giants. But I think you're right. I think it's defense. One thing I liked about this performance, or at least what I saw out of the offense in this game, was, you know, Booger, up and down over the course of the season, there's been questions, I think less about the execution or less about the talent. Although I will say, if Amari Cooper's not on the field, it goes south real fast for this passing attack. Statistically, that's borne out, and they absolutely need him. But the issues have been with the play calling at times, the turtling. And what I loved about this game out of Dallas was in the fourth quarter when they were up by 5, they didn't let up off the accelerator. They kept passing, right? I mean, that the Amari conversion, the touchdown, which was a dagger concept, that was third and 12 or something, right? I felt like maybe there were times in the past when Jason Garrett would have just tried to run it, Zeke, over and over, but he kept throwing to Amari, Cobb, Witten on that drive. And I really appreciate that because I think they're going to have to do that to win games. And especially, by the way, against, you know, a Vikings defense that's, I know that they just got ripped up by Matt Moore, which is dispiriting, but their issue to me, Booger, is the secondary.
Yeah, it's one of those things where, you know, when you look at Trey Waynes, Xavier Rhodes, the guys on the back end, like those corners should be really, really special. But they've been kind of average at best. And the defensive line, Danielle Hunter out of LSU, he may be the best bargain in football. I mean, I think he is dominant. He's only probably making like 12 or 13 million when the top ends are getting like 18 or 19. So, their defensive line is really good though. And I think, you know, Zimmer will get it figured out. And I say that because Zimmer is a very good defensive coach. He's a grinder. He doesn't accept no for an answer. And the key to Minnesota is not the defense. It's going to be which Kirk Cousins shows up. I mean, does the one who likes that shows up or the one who hates it show up? Like, I'm trying to figure out which guy is going to show up, you know? And you know, Dalvin Cook, I think he's the third best back right now in the league. I think it's Zeke 1, Saquon 2, Dalvin Cook 3. You know, if you're going to expand the MVP conversation to one more, so number 5, you probably put Dalvin Cook in there. So they are a run-first team, but very similar to the 49ers. When you run the football the way they do, you're going to get premier looks on the outside. Now, unlike the 49ers, they have two dynamic receivers. But Kirk Cousins has got to get them the football. Oh, and by the way, if you double cover them, I got two tight ends in Rudolph and Irv Smith Jr. where I could beat you too. So the Vikings offense should be as unstoppable as, you know, maybe the 49ers or the Cowboys, who statistically are number 1, but for whatever reason, the quarterback just a little off. And so that loss in Kansas City was a puzzling loss. I don't care who you are. Like, you shouldn't lose to Matt Moore. Matt Moore was teaching school about 3 weeks ago, and all of a sudden he comes from the school board meeting to just dicing your defense up. Like, come on, seriously? That shouldn't happen.
He's still, honestly, he's one of the better backups in the league, but you're right. I think, you know, looking at that game and thinking about this secondary and what the Cowboys should do to them, part of me, Booger, wants to say it's unfair to judge anyone after they've gotten burnt by Tyreek Hill, and, you know what I mean, like, in that Chiefs office. But as you mentioned, Waynes to some degree, but especially Rhodes, have not played at a high level all year. But you're right. It's Cousins, right? Because the Chiefs sold out against the run in this game, and that's what defenses will do. And without Thielen, they got to get Diggs involved better than they have. It's been super erratic. And the tight ends, Irv Smith Jr., I think, is becoming a bigger and bigger part of the offense. Cousins just has to hit him. He's going to be open. So I think it's simplistic to say that Kirk Cousins is the key to this offense, but it seems to me that it's very clear that he is, because they're doing the right things around him. I mean, the use of play action has been oft commented on, but it can be so deadly with these weapons, with that running back. And if he's not able to take advantage of it, they're not going to win games.
Yeah, I completely agree. Not only are they not going to win games, they're not going to be able to ultimately get into the play and get into the playoffs. Like, that's pretty much all you want. Like, we talk about Super Bowl and this team and that team. What you want to do is be one of the six teams to get into the playoffs, because then it's a matchup game. Okay, the first two get byes and the next four have to play. So then it becomes like a boxing match. Which style is going to make which fight? And so once you get in, that's why you can see a team that's a wild card team get in and go to Super Bowl, because they get the right matchup. And so I think all teams in the NFL should be thinking about is getting into the playoffs. And once you secure that, can you get a home game? Then once you secure that, can you get a first round bye? I think that's the order that we always look at. Get in, home game, bye. You know, because your chances of getting to the championship game and the Super Bowl go up astronomically when you get that bye. But it doesn't mean just because you don't get it that you can't get there either. So I've played on wild card weekend. My Indianapolis Colts team, we played on wild card weekend. We beat the Chiefs. We beat the Ravens. We beat the Patriots. We beat the Bears for the Super Bowl championship. So it can be done. It's a little tougher, but oh well.
Well, getting into the playoffs is hard. So is getting out of debt, especially if your credit score isn't great. Thankfully, now there's Upstart.com, the revolutionary lending platform that lets you know you are more than just your credit score and offers smarter interest rates to help you pay off higher interest credit card debt. Upstart goes beyond the traditional credit score when assessing your credit worthiness. They actually reward you based on your education and job history in the form of a smarter interest rate. Upstart believes you're more than just your credit card score. They believe in you, and they understand that. They make it fast, simple, and easy to check your rate in just a few minutes. The best part? Once the loan is approved and accepted, most people get their funds the very next business day. The next day. Over 300,000 people have used Upstart to pay off credit cards or meet their financial goals. Free yourself from the burden of high-interest credit card debt by consolidating everything into one monthly payment with Upstart. See why Upstart is ranked number one in their category with over 300 businesses on Trustpilot. And hurry to upstart.com/Mina to find out how low your Upstart rate is. Checking your rate only takes a few minutes and won't affect your credit. That's upstart.com/Mina.
And now it's time for Dinks and Dunks. I'm getting paid for this, right?
Booger, always close the show by asking five questions. The fifth one is from my dog, Lenny, and it's usually rude. Are you ready?
Let's do it.
Question one. You played for the Bucks. You live in Tampa Bay. Who's the starting quarterback next year?
Jameis Winston.
Yeah. Okay, let me rephrase that. Who's the starting quarterback the year after?
I still think it's going to be Jameis Winston. I think we're so quick and we're so much of a reactionary society. Go back and look at Jameis Winston's body of work. Look at the numbers. And, yes, I'm going to tell you he turns the football over a lot. But look at the other numbers. When he doesn't turn the football over, like, he almost outplayed Russell Wilson in Seattle this past week. And I think that position is so hard to find that when you get one that's maybe a little still rough around the edges, don't just throw him away. You got to keep polishing him up. I think they're going to franchise him this year and then give him one more year, and hopefully he can cut down on the turnovers. Like, if you took half the turnovers away, Jameis Winston would have a $100 million deal right now. But I think there's a little trepidation because of the turnovers.
I think you're right. I think they're going to franchise him. By the way, Jameis Winston, I mentioned Russell Wilson's been deadly on play action. He's been right behind him. He's just so difficult to evaluate, I think, because the teams around him haven't been good. And because of the turnovers. And you know, he goes on these streaks of being really excellent. And then they're immediately undone, right, by like one game, and everyone forgets that he had five games that were really good. But I think you're right. I think they're going to franchise him as well. Question two, LSU, Alabama, final score.
I'm going to go 35-31, good guys. And I think you know who the good guys are.
Alabama, you think, right?
Yeah, okay, whatever.
Well, actually, can I spin off question? Is Joe Burrow the number one draft pick next year?
You know, I'm not a quarterback whisperer, and I'm not just going to say yeah because he went to LSU. But the people that I talk to say that the thing they like about him is he makes NFL throws. So he's not just throwing the ball to a receiver; he's throwing the receiver open, and he's accurate, and he has command, and they like him just as much as they like Tua and these other guys. So I think he's going to play in the NFL, whether he goes number one or number 40, or I have no idea. But the people that do this for a living say he's going to play and will probably be drafted pretty high.
Mm-hmm. See if he ends up on the Bengals or the Dolphins. Question three. One thing I've enjoyed listening to your broadcast is you've been really kind of open and transparent about issues with the officiating. I wonder, what is one thing you think should happen, one change that you would recommend for next season for the officiating?
Let's review everything, or let's review nothing at all. I think the issue that's killing the NFL right now is gray area. You know, if I tell my kids, hey, no TV after 5, then they get it. They may not like it, but they understand. If I tell them no TV after 5 except – programs that are approved by XYZ, then they're going to be like, okay, so which programs are approved? Like, you do, like anytime you open up gray area, I think there's room for confusion.
I think that's spot on. I think the problem with the whole challenges thing is just making it seem like it was an actual option, right? Because if it had never been an option, nobody would complain about any of this. Fourth question.
Here's what I was told about the pass interference. Is that they are not trying to re-officiate the play. So, in other words, give you a prime example, like the two we had the other night. The one against Owuzie, there's no doubt in my mind it was pass interference. No doubt. Mm-hmm. Pat Shurmur threw the flag. The call, I think the call was stands, which means it was because they didn't throw a flag on the field for the call. He threw the flag trying to get a call.
Yeah.
So the call was stands. They are not trying to put flags down unless the egregiousness arises to what we saw between the Rams and the Saints. If it doesn't get to that level, they are not going to re-officiate the play. This rule is in place so the NFL doesn't get embarrassed during their broadcast or their biggest games. So I think if we will all approach the rule that way, we will be a lot less frustrated.
Do you think it'll change in the postseason?
Yes, I think it will. I think because postseason, there's a reality that it's final. Like, if you miss a call, teams go home, people lose jobs. And so what I think you're going to get is I think human nature kicks in, and you're not going to want to blow a call on the biggest stages and the biggest games. And so, you know, I just think that's the human nature. Even though – you know, Pat Shurmur would tell you that the game Monday night was as big a game in their season as ever, it still wasn't finality. You know, the Giants are going to play again and again. They have several more games. Well, the playoffs, you don't have any more, and I think that's going to be the biggest difference.
Question four. Do you ever get hungry in the booth? Do you have snacks up there?
I have tons of snacks. My favorite go-to snacks are cashews. I have a ton of cashews in the booth. Normally during the game, I drink unsweetened tea. I put a little stevia in it. That's my drink of choice. So I'll probably drink three of those. I'll drink a Coke Zero after halftime because normally at halftime I eat a hamburger patty plain with nothing on it. And once I drink my Diet Coke, that's pretty much my dinner for the night.
So you get the little Diet Coke Zero has caffeine, right?
I don't know. I think they do. Diet Coke, Coke Zero, whatever's available.
That makes sense. Do you ever have to go to the bathroom?
Yes. And during times where you don't hear me talk a lot, I'm probably in the bathroom. because just Joe Tessitore has to carry it till I get back. And normally that's easy because we have bathrooms in the booth. But in Pittsburgh, the bathroom was down the hall. So I had to run down the hall, and all I heard was the crowd going, wow. So I'm like, man, please do not let there have been a big play where, you know, Tess is waiting on me to say something. And literally, I walked back in the booth, and he was finishing the call. I didn't even see the play. I just grabbed the mic, and I was like, man, what a play.
Last question, as always, is from Lenny. My co-host, Booger, I don't write his questions. Don't shoot the messenger. Lenny wants to know if it's true that Zion Williamson is your son.
Not at all. If I had a dollar for every time I've been asked about him and the running back at Maryland, I would stop the Monday Night Football gig right now because I would have too much money.